This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Ruslan, today we have the return of, he's an actor, he's a director, he is Naam Murad.
Hi, great to be back.
Good. And we have also the return of, after far too long, she's an actress, and she's an actress.
Yes.
She is Farah Rani.
Yes, hello, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
An actress and an actress.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because people
are really versatile.
Where do you find the time?
I don't know.
A lot of people hyphen it, but Farah is dedicated to the art and craft of acting. And so our three topics this week are, topic number one is freelancing. Topic number two is an old story
about
dogs. And finally, topic number three will be Wong Yang Ke. So I read a piece recently from Forbes magazine. So it is estimated that in the United States, in the year 2027, probably 50% of the American workforce will be freelancing.
Oh.
Yeah, at least half. That's what 50% means, isn't it?
Well done.
So what year was that?
It said 2027.
2027.
That's pretty soon.
That's 8 years away.
Yeah, but which also then clashes with another bit of information in the same article saying that about 20 to 30% of the workforce presently is freelancing in America. Mm. So that's an enormous leap they're predicting the next 7 years. So I don't know what's going on.
Slightly
there.
After the climate change apocalypse, though.
It's something.
So
will there be I do believe.
Are they related in any way?
Yeah, I do believe zombies will be involved. But anyway, but the trend is a growth, certainly, in freelancing. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily that it will completely dominate the workforce, but there is a movement toward. So there'll be a lot of people who are, I can say a lot of people who are listening now, but you know, both of the people who are listening now will be probably in full-time employment, but you know, they might find themselves at some point freelancing. So it just so happens that the three of us here are freelancers.
That is correct.
So I thought it would be interesting to talk about the culture of freelancing insofar as, you know, what does it take to be freelancing? What are some of the common experiences? But, you know, let's not just take the opportunity to complain about late payments.
Yes.
late payments?
I started freelancing when I first came back to Malaysia back in the early 90s, and I was working in advertising in production, TV commercial production, and there was so much work. In the 90s, you finish one commercial, another one would start the next day, and it was well paid, and it just like felt like it would go on forever. Yeah. And so I was lulled very much into freelancing was the way to go.
Yeah.
But it kind of dried up. So freelancing does have its problems, but I would say that there are certain traits that I've come across. One is, by being a freelancer, you work in many different organizations.
Yes.
So you get to experience good practice and bad practice.
Yes.
Whereas I think if you work in an office, you can't help but eventually think that the office is the only office in the whole wide world.
Right.
And the way you do things is the way things are done. But I think that when you're a freelancer, you do get to see a lot of different practices.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be very frustrating to be coming into an office where it's a really bad practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You're used to working at a particular company and doing things in an efficient way or just enjoying the work environment, and then suddenly you get another project where, as a freelancer, you know, it's not your place to say, well, you know, maybe you should be doing it this way or that way, because, you know, you're a freelancer. You're here to just write a script or do... Yeah, and it gets a bit frustrating and you wonder why there's such a disparity.
But working with different companies as well, you figure out what's the best way to go about doing
something. If you were to open your own company, then you...
but most
freelancers never make enough money to ever open your own company.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, another thing that I've discovered, because when I first started, I did make some terrible mistakes, and I got fired from at least one job. Now, I almost got fired from another because my attitude was terrible.
Oh.
I was so arrogant. It was awful. Yeah, it was terrible. I was awful.
Oh.
I mean,
I'm so glad I
didn't know that this camera's like, yeah. This camera's like, so
you're
this
such
well,
a nice guy, Cameron.
But that's the thing, you see.
Oh.
You learn that.
Okay.
And so it becomes a necessity when you're a freelancer. You have to be like a really nice guy.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, to get hired for things. Yeah.
Otherwise you become that problem person.
Yeah.
And you are so disposable as a freelancer.
Mm. until you gain a reputation. Then you gain a reputation and people hire you as a freelancer because they really want your work. They really like your work. Then you have a bit of a leeway to be a bit difficult. I mean, I'm not saying difficult as in, you know, I want somebody to make my latte for me and give me a foot massage. But difficult in the sense that you insist on doing things in a certain way. You get a bit of leverage once you've got a name.
Yeah. Really? I've never gotten to that point. Yeah? I want to get to the point where I can be really rude to people again.
Oh, no.
I've been holding it in for...
That sounds like a terrible cycle.
So what about you two? What is kind of the culture of freelancing that you found? I mean, why would you choose to do so far? You were a lawyer, a trained lawyer.
Yes.
What were you thinking?
Freelancing. I don't know. I ask myself that every morning.
Why did the freelancing... appeal Trump. To you
well,
when you had
the law
thing?
I was already acting while I was in law school and while I was chambering. So I was doing both for a very long time. And it just came to a point where I had to pick one because I was really tired. It's really as simple as that. Like I couldn't do both anymore and I had to pick one.
So it's the acting as opposed to the freelancing that took you? Because, yes.
I was very lucky early on and I was working a lot. And unfortunately, that's not true anymore.
But technically, there is no such thing as a full-time actor. There's never an actor hired by...
someone all the time.
All the time. I mean, in Singapore, you hear of theatre companies that have their own stock of actors, but that doesn't happen here in Malaysia.
Yeah, no, it's standard with
that.
Do
they?
No, they don't have their own ensemble.
They
don't?
Don't
they? I don't think they do.
What about you, Nah? Why have you stuck it out with the freelancing?
Same as you guys, because it started out as the thing to do, and I was getting enough work, and it was interesting. And also, there's this phenomenon of when you have one company, or several companies, where it seemed that I was only a freelancer by name. I was there all the time. I was doing project after project. So I was almost working for them full time, and I had the freedom of not taking off for a couple of months if I wanted to, but I was getting most of my income there. So it became a point where it was very difficult for me to imagine being a full-time anything, whether it was a director, a writer, or an actor. I just couldn't imagine it anymore because there was so much freedom. But of course, like you guys, when things dried up, the option became more urgent, and yet also I still realized I knew nothing about being a full-time worker.
Yeah. But we have to not let the people out there know this. So we are very much still in demand.
Yes, we are.
Please hire me.
To the two people who are listening to this show, spread it. Just, you know, get on social media and talk about us.
But there is a joy and a feeling of accomplishment during those good years, you know, not having had to depend on a company or having the security of a paycheck.
Healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get insurance. If you're a freelancer, get
each
insurance.
Job being incredibly different. You could be just working in one place and next you are traveling all over Malaysia doing, so every job is
and
different.
Touring. Oh my God. So,
So it's great.
It's great.
Yeah. It was great.
It was great.
So anyway, let's not, but quickly though, would you recommend it or not to, it's going to happen anyway, actually.
We
were the forerunners. So
I think we need to fix the circumstances, how freelancers are treated. Unionize. I think in America there's a freelancer.
There is a freelance union.
Which, if that's going to be, you know, there will be more freelancers. We need something to happen.
We've got this EPF thing now. EPF for film for freelancers. That's open. I don't know how that's going to work.
I don't know, because production companies aren't getting more money.
No, they're
not.
I mean? I'll wrap this one very quickly though, because apparently the future is better because of the use of blockchain. Now, obviously, we know what blockchain means. Yeah.
But I don't know what blockchain means.
Well, somebody attacks you with a sword. Blockchain.
So just keep a chain in your bag. It's a martial arts self-defense thing.
All right. So freelancers always be armed.
With chains.
with chains.
Sword-wielding ruffians out there.
Okay. And that's a freelancer. So anyway, we move on to topic number two.
It's just an old story. I think a lot of people have heard this story and they've heard many versions of it. And now that we've got this, I think it's a nice story to tell in this culture where, you know, dogs are getting a bad rep and a lot of people are upset about how dogs are being treated. Full disclosure, I think they're wonderful animals. I've never really had a dog except for when I was a child. We lived in a government compound, which, you know, had no gates and everything. So my father decided it'd be a good idea to have a dog. So even as a Melayu family, we had a dog. And we loved him, was part of the family and everything. But anyway, I digress. So back in the day, 1930s, a member of the Kelantan royal family, I can't find a name or which Tengku this was, but some people have sources where everything is much clearer. I'm just giving you a very rough version. A member of the Kelantan royal family, a Tengku, liked dogs, and he kept dogs. And, you know, being a member of the royal family, nobody really bothered. Maybe a lot of people kind of like noticed and were not happy that, you know, this Tengku had a dog and was fond of dogs. So the sister, also like, I don't know which Tengku this was, felt that this wasn't on, that, you know, your reputation is going to be sullied and everything like that, and criticized him. So back in the day, the issue, I thought, what was the important thing, was the issue was dealt with in a very interesting way. This Tengku decided, the current sultan at that time also agreed, so let's just have a public debate. And so they had a public debate. It wasn't like somebody came in and gave a fatwa that this has to happen in the SM. So to resolve the issue, they had something called a Majlis Mudzakara. And so they invited people from both sides, people who were pro and con. And the current mufti of Kelantan was against. But the ex-mufti was for. Can you imagine? So you had all these different people of learned Muslim scholars of that time in Kelantan came and took sides. And they had this nice debate. It was a nice debate. It wasn't like they would, from all sources. And it was just a very civilized debate. After the debate, the Tengku said, like, okay, and it was open to the public. That's the most important
That's
thing.
Amazing.
People came and listened to it. And at the end, he said, okay, this is not to determine anything. I'm going to keep on keeping a dog. But you all think for yourself from hearing both sides, make up your own opinion. But as far as I'm concerned, it's an okay thing. I follow whatever protocols and it's okay. The sister, who was against it all the while, felt like this wasn't enough. A debate was enough. So what did she do? Did she cause trouble? Did she? No, she wrote to the University Al-Azhar and asked the University Al-Azhar, what do you think? And the sheikh of the University Al-Azhar at that time, the name is not on my phone right now, but this is 1937, after ruminating for a while, wrote back and said, no, it's fine. You should be able to keep a dog as long as you keep to certain protocols.
Yeah.
Right? Anybody, any Muslim can keep a dog. So, and that was it. Bear in mind, this is 1937, okay? Things were very different. But I was just thinking of how civilized that was. When you had an issue that was the whole thing about dogs, I think, in Muslim culture, it's so complicated. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I was telling Cam about how the Bedouins actually have a breed called the Saluki. And there are many actually Middle Eastern breeds, but the Bedouins, it's part of their life. The Bedouins hunt with their dogs. They love their dogs. I've seen documentaries where they adore their dogs. And so back in the day, I don't know whether it was Hadith or whatever, Salukis were exempt from haramness, which led some scholars to say all pure breeds are exempt from haramness because haram is actually a reaction to mongrels and diseased dogs and things like that. So if chances are, a purebred, well kept by generations of humans, would be clean, would be cleaner. So some scholars now say that would mean if a Saluki can be exempt, so can any breed. So if you have a Labradoodle, whatever, you know, it should be exempt.
Well, but Sheikh Murad, if I could ask. In my family, we've had quite a few dogs. But we lived here up until 1970, and we had a couple of dogs. And then we left and went to England. Now, when you grow up in Britain, you can't be all kind of like, dog. You can't because it's just everywhere.
Yeah.
And you just can't sustain that kind of preciousness. But in the 60s, though, if you had a dog as a Malay, no big deal.
No big deal.
By the time I moved back in 1990, on the other hand, it was a totally different story.
Yeah.
So those intervening years were obviously the time when the change happened. But one thing I personally would say with dogs is that man and dog have had relationship for about 50,000 years.
Yeah. Oh, 50.
Completely imprinted upon each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's an argument to be made.
I think men would not have survived
Dogs,
or would be a degraded creature.
And I think there's an argument to be made that actually there is a species called man-dog that actually took over the world. Working together, because when you are with the dog, the dog hears and sees things that you don't, and vice versa.
And you have the legend of Parameswara hunting with his dogs. Dog, and yeah. So it was very much part of the Malay or this region yeah. punya culture. Oh, yeah. I said punya.
Yeah. So I, you know, therefore I'm obviously, you know, for some I'd be a terrible person. But yeah.
But yeah, it's such a stark contrast with what's going on now with people poisoning, leaving food out.
A dog was shot in somewhere.
Yeah, that's just awful, terrifying. Awful.
Well, we're going to wrap that one up, but in a moment we're going to go from one frying pan to another frying pan here on A Bit of Culture on BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Na'a Murad, and Farah Rani. And now, topic number three is...
So today we're going to talk about Wong Yan Ke, who earlier this week at his graduation staged a protest. He basically carried a placard while receiving his certificate.
All by himself, right?
All by himself. It's an individual protest. Mm-hmm. And he did this because the vice chancellor, whose name is Abdul Rahim Hashim, was part of the Malay Dignity Congress. And I didn't know this, but there were four universities that organized the Malay Dignity Congress.
Which I didn't know that either.
I don't know why that really surprised me. I thought it came from like a more grassroots organization and universities, I think, in my mind, should be more liberal and not side with Malay nationalists. Anyway, so the vice chancellor reportedly made a racially charged speech at the Congress where the chief organizer, whose name is Zainal Kling, the irony in that, said that Malaysia was for Malays as Thailand was for Thais and India for Indians, which I find really problematic. So at the graduation, at the protest, Wong shouted, "This is Malaysian land." And a few days after that, UM lodged a police report. And Wong Yan Ke is now being investigated under Section 504 of the Penal Code. Intentional insult to disturb public peace.
Did I read it correctly that they're taking away his
yeah, his, he wasn't able to pick up his certificate and academic transcripts.
Right.
Should have done that first and then
rush
to do that and come back and do the protest.
You pick up your transcripts after.
After, okay.
So his lawyer said that valid criticism is not an insult.
Okay, well, bit of culture looks at things from more sort of, you know, cultural aspect as opposed to purely a political or current affairs. Mm-hmm. So which sort of aspect of this are you enjoying or not?
Because the big criticism is that was not the appropriate place.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Graduation ceremony is not the appropriate place.
Student protest has been not part of our culture for a long time.
Yes, not part of. Yeah, but it was, no?
It was in the 70s.
Like 70s. We're going back in time now.
We are today.
Well, they had 30s, so we moved up.
They had long hair and beards and all that kind of thing.
And those platform boots.
Hippies.
But so we're talking about how it's appropriate or not. Right, and whether it's our culture or not. But the same guy, Wong Yan Ke, he was assaulted by some UMNO youth outside of UM while he was protesting peacefully.
Sorry, is it before or after?
Before. This was like months ago, earlier this year.
Oh, okay.
Oh, what was he protesting about then?
I don't know. Exactly,
oh, so he is an activist.
He is an activist. A student activist.
Right.
So if he can't protest peacefully...
Okay, well, Malaysian stroke Asian life is, it does like to be dignified, doesn't it? And for ceremonies to pass off beautifully, because people like a good ceremony.
Yeah.
And especially something when a lot of kids, and I call them kids because they're much younger than me.
Yes.
But they're not. They've just graduated and they're collecting their certificates after all their hard work. And then one guy comes along and makes a ruckus for whatever subject. Is that not ruining everyone else's day?
Is it a ruckus? He goes up, has a thing, says this is Malaysian land.
Yeah.
How does that ruin everyone's time?
People have been complaining that he's using the wrong platform. But my question is, what is the right platform?
Exactly.
Is there a platform?
Is there a dignified way to protest?
Again, if he was a tengku in the 30s,
he
could have had a nice debate, but those days are gone too. You know?
He doesn't have... platform.
Mm. Well, he could always just shout it into his pillow, I suppose. That's inappropriate.
But who will hear it?
Precisely. That would be the hope, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
What was the charge again? Sorry?
The charge was intentional insult to disturb public peace. Section 504 of the Penal Code.
And yet, do you wonder...
Sorry.
What? I mean, that's from, like, what? 1833 yeah, or something.
I wonder if an educator who is in charge of a multiracial institution should make statements like that. That sounds a bit wrong too.
I feel like this, where we are now as a country, fighting over who gets what, right? Who can claim this land? Mm-hmm. And if these universities can hold a congress about Malay dignity, mm-hmm. Why can't this man say, this is my land too?
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And I think that, I mean, the word dignity here is, for me, a key.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
And then we have generational gaps here, mm-hmm. where the older person, the maintenance of dignity is all important.
Yeah.
And to attack that or to have any kind of cracks in that is terrifying.
Yeah. Can I read to you the definition of dignity?
Oh, go ahead.
Because it's come up a lot this past few weeks, right, this word. But the definition is, dignity means the quality of a person that makes him deserving of respect, shown in behavior or appearance.
Oh, but that's one of those fancy Western dictionaries, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. But
you have to deserve it.
You
dignity.
Have to.
Come on.
To deserve dignity, say you're a dignified person.
No, but then
pick it up at 7-Eleven or everything else, right?
But Farah, that is the point, please. Though. You're deserving. That is such a Western liberal definition. I'm not against it.
Right.
But I would say that it does actually run counter to the notion of what dignity is here, which is not necessarily...
It's inherited.
Exactly.
It's innate. Yeah. Marwa
but
you is innate.
But the truth is, okay, you can have that. You can have an inherited dignity of a perception of your culture or something like that, that we are dignified people and therefore should be treated with dignity. But then again, it should also be constantly looked at. Like, you can lose your dignity. It doesn't mean that you have this this inherited dignity that you can never lose no matter what you do.
But I think
that
it's about behavior.
It's true.
That's my thing. Like,
that's
you
what
don't,
I mean.
You're not acting dignified.
You should be able to... I mean, everybody who is born should be have a certain amount of dignity.
Dignity, for sure,
but
yeah.
Do you maintain it? Do you hold it? That is your responsibility. And I think to just...
expect.
Just to not have any kind of responsibility over your own dignity, that you've got it and you will maintain it no matter what you say or do is wrong, I think.
You know? But I think it's really undignified for you to say that other people who were born here don't belong here.
Yes, but is it also undignified then to start screaming in the middle of a public ceremony when people are collecting their things?
I don't think so.
So for you... It is a perfectly acceptable thing to break up somebody else's moment.
But it's his moment.
It's his moment. But all these other people there are not interested in his moment.
No, he's picking up his... He's not shouting when other people are picking up their certificate.
As he was up there?
As he was up there, he picks it up, has a placard of his demands, asking the VC to resign, and shouts, this is Malaysian land.
Hmm. I mean, not that I disagree with his statement, of course, but I think that we...
Do you know what I mean? Like,
but if you disagreed with his statement, you would feel that it was an undignified moment. If he turned around and said, this is not...
Malaysian land?
Or whatever, you know, the opposite of that.
Yeah.
At that moment, you would say that was an undignified thing to do. And it was the wrong approach. You would probably say it's the wrong place
protests,
to do it.
All protest is supposed to be undignified. I mean, protesting is not something... that you're pushed to a point where politeness goes out the door because you are protesting something that... is not polite. I mean, I agree that he could be spoiling people's day and that kind of thing. He should be punished in a way for you know, sort of like just breaking the rules. But why a police investigation?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Why
that's
is
going,
he being
that's going
treated like an absolute criminal?
That's going.
No, but
I mean,
also
like,
to withhold your degree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That he's worked for. That he's worked for.
Yeah. And criminals don't get their degrees taken away from them, you
know? No, absolutely.
Pedophiles don't get their
degrees.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anyway, so we must wrap this one up. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be an ongoing story, sadly. And
all the issues, freelancers. You were talking about Malaysians trying to get what they deserve.
Yeah.
Well, freelancers.
Right.
So, well, see, everything's connected. Everything, I always try to tie everything.
Yeah, thank you. So this has been
how to put in dogs.
So this has been, just by chance, it happens to be the Malay edition of Bitter Culture with the three of us and producer Ali. He's hiding in the corner.
Because Chris out for a while and I was a bit worried.
But we're going to have the last part of the show now. Recommendations, where we recommend something that we think might be of interest.
Just recommend, you know, really controversial stuff.
I have a really radical idea. I would like to recommend kindness.
Kindness.
I feel like this past week has been a bit tough. People have just been unkind.
Yeah, even people who are justified in being angry are being a bit too unkind.
I'm talking about
social media.
Oh, you know.
There's something about making your point across and just being rude.
Yeah, but civility. Obnoxious. It's a call for civility. Yeah. Empathy, and kindness. Civility. Yeah. Kindness, yeah.
Okay, well, you weren't supposed to go then, but
you're
being uncivil. You jumped in. Anyway, okay, so we'll have you go first because...
Yes,
You wanted to make your statement.
Yes, I did. So, things to say, Kat.
All right. So kindness there from Farahani. I'll go next then.
Yes, please.
Thank you. So my recommendation is, it's an old TV show, but I've just suddenly gotten back into it. It's Veep.
Ooh.
Veep?
Yeah.
Julia
Louis-Dreyfus. With her, it's 7 series, I think.
Yeah, it just finished.
There have been 7 series, and it starts off with her as the vice president.
Yeah.
And it goes through twists and turns until she finally, well, spoiler alert, she gets top dog job. Top dog.
Again, with the connection.
Oh, what is this show is going to be? It's going to be, they're going to be placards outside. It's just brilliant. Veep is so well written, so well acted. It's incredibly rude. Do not watch it with, it's not a family entertainment. Really foul language, I have to say, but it's just brilliant. And even in the age of Trump, when Trump seems to have broken up every norm, and you know, you can't go back and watch those old movies where they had the U.S. president or something.
Can't compete with Trump.
No, absolutely. But Veep actually manages to keep in step with it.
They're so horrible.
Yeah,
all the characters there.
I never watched it. I guess I'm the first person. Listening to this, was going to have to give it a shot. Yeah.
You'd like it. Really would. It was created originally by Armando Iannucci, the British fellow who was the brains behind Thick of It and several other great things. Alan Partridge. So, Veep, brilliant.
I'm going to recommend something old, something that I recommended 3 years ago. But I'm going to re-recommend it because it's up to its 4th season soon. It's a TV series called The Expanse.
Ooh.
And it's a science fiction series based on a series of books. And it's very hard science. It's not, you know, like lightsabers and stuff like that. It's about a possible future in where our solar system is broken into 3 nations, in a sense. Earth, which is run by the UN. Mars, which is sort of like a military culture, which used to be a colony of Earth, but it's broken away, much like the US. You know, a lot of history is based on that. And people called the Belters, who are a loose grouping of people who live in the harsh parts, excuse me, asteroids and places like that. But they literally are the workhorses who actually, without them, neither Mars nor Earth would actually have the resources that they want to. But they are more like a working class culture who do not have one particular base. They kind of like a roaming. So you've got, it's politics, but also it's a little bit of that metaphysics and adventure and stuff like that. And it's down to earth. You don't have, you know, light speed and
it takes
weeks to get anywhere.
Oh, it's really boring
kind of stuff. So it's got the feeling of frontier life too. And when I first recommended it was the first season. It's really great, and it just grew and grew and grew, and it just got better. The characters are amazing. And the thing is, you know how when you watch things like Game of Thrones or any show that has a lot of story, you feel as though that one season has tried to stretch one story for a long time. Even though I love Handmaid's Tale, they're beginning to do that now.
Yeah.
Like the story doesn't move on. They want to keep it there. They try to stretch. The thing is with The Expanse, you feel like you've watched 2 seasons within one season. The story just continues and grows and gets bigger and moves on to, you almost have like 3 or 4 different arcs in one season, but within the same context. So aside from all that, it's a very good show. They were cancelled last year at Sci-Fi, but Amazon rescued them, okay, with the help of Jeff Bezos, who was a big fan. Yeah. So now they've got a nice fourth season, less episodes, but it looks wonderful. And anybody who likes science fiction and adventure and frontier kind of stuff, matter of fact, people who love Game of Thrones would probably love this.
Yeah. And it's more sciencey.
More sciencey, though. And, quite sciencey. It's realistic, in many ways.
So I just want to quickly say, I think it's related. I knew this guy a long time ago. He was making a video game. This is about years ago, like early video games. And he insisted that it be scientifically accurate.
Hard science.
So he said it in like the solar system. But as I say, he insisted that things travel at the kind of speed they can travel at. So I was saying, you mean to finish your game, it would take you 5,000 light years. I don't think you're going to sell any. And sure enough, I've never heard from him since.
The show doesn't go beyond certain planets because they want to keep it within that. And they have a faster drive, which is faster than anything we have now. But in order to have that many Gs, like forces of gravity, like 15 Gs, 20 Gs, humans have to have special chairs and they have to be pumped up with some kind of fluid. So traveling at that speed is dangerous. If you're at our age, Cam, it would be already considered dangerous to actually
standing up from this chair
without things cracking. So you have that level of realism. You have one character who's in her 70s and she needed to be rescued, and yet they had to have her at 11 Gs. And you know, like in Star Wars, they're there, right? Yeah, this one is like the whole tension is we don't even know if she'll make the trip. So you got that kind of extra elements of danger, and it's wonderful.
I'll give it a try, but I do like my hyperspeed. So Expanse.
And sound in space, right? You want
yeah, absolutely, yeah. Pew, pew, pew.
The Expanse.
Laser beam.
The Expanse.
Fourth season coming out soon on Amazon.
Okay. So this has been probably the last episode of Bitter Culture because we're going to be having demonstrations.
My dog lovers.
Sorry, guys.
My dog haters.
Yeah. Oh, God. It had to happen. But anyway, I want to thank Na'amura.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Farahani.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
No, really. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You better leave quickly before the crowd comes.
Yeah, I'm going to point at you. Like, with kindness.
With kindness.
It was her. With kindness. And myself, Cam Ruslan. And, well, I'm going to say it just because I always say it. Please join us next time. Here on A Bit of Culture.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.